Case number 13-1068, Security Point Holdings, Inc., petitioner versus Transportation Security Administration. Mr. Goldberg for the petitioner, Mr. Capel for the respondent.
He and I are a lot older. Let's wait till the courtroom's clear. Goldberg, good morning.
May it please the court, Roy Goldberg on behalf of the petitioner Security Point Holdings, and I have Don Pelto and Nate Bruno with me at council table. Your honors, before August 2012 and the events that bring us here today, Security Point, the petitioner, entered into agreements with many airports to provide and maintain tray carts and divesting tables for airport and TSA agents to use at airport security screening checkpoints. Now, the trays contain advertising in the bottom of the tray, and Security Point shares the revenues with the airport operator. This was beneficial to everyone involved. TSA didn't have to pay for these equipment. The airport operator and Security Point would share the advertising revenues from a commercial third-party advertiser. Separately, Security Point sued the TSA in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, alleging infringement of Security Point's patent for a method of security screening that involves trays and carts and scanning devices and various other elements. So that case was pending, and in response to filing of that case, the TSA Office of Chief Counsel retaliated against Security Point.
Well, now you're verging into a disputed proposition, right?
Your Honor, that's right. We have circumstantial, and we would even submit direct evidence with regard to the emails from Arthur Drenth. Now, to be candid, those are emails that the TSA says should not be part of the record, and that's a motion that's in front of you, Your Honor.
Isn't your central contention on retaliation that you alerted TSA to the proposition that this new MOU would be shooting itself in the foot, and your argument on that in relation to the effect on airports' willingness to sign the agreement was not actually answered by TSA?
Certainly it wasn't answered, and it wasn't considered, and you know, under State Farm, we would argue that the final order in this case should have addressed all the evidence we put in, not only from ourselves, but also from the Atlanta airport. We can't, that kind of indemnification we can't agree to. From San Jose Airport, the same thing. From the TSA agents in Boston, which said, you know, Massport will never agree to this language. So all of that was put.
Durango.
La Plata, apparently, yes, right. Which the record is not developed as to, that was not a Security Point airport. It's a very small airport. And there's no record as to how that one went through. What we know is that since August 2012, Security Point has not added a single airport to this program, even though Boston and San Antonio and St. Louis and San Jose were on the cusp of doing so with the old MOU. We know that Atlanta had put out a solicitation for Security Point, had responded to, and they came back, and this is in the record, and before Office of Chief Counsel and said, we cannot, Georgia law does not allow a municipality to do that. And then San Diego also recently had a termination clause, and that they couldn't renew that agreement, so they're out as well. So it's not only that, part of it is that TSA was shooting themselves in the foot, because this is revenue. The record shows at JA6 that just the pilot program alone, which was in a handful of airports in 2006-2007, that the TSA saved $435,000. So even though it's not in the record, one can extrapolate the savings that occurred in many years after that at the 40 airports. These are very large airports where Security Point is.
But a question about, sure, this notion that that TSA was shooting itself in the foot. So as I understand the sequence of events, you write a letter to TSA, a series of letters to TSA that says, stop this conduct, you retaliate against me as a consequence of my filing a patent suit. TSA responds and says, no, we're not retaliating against you. We have business reasons for adjusting the MOU in the way that we did. And as part of your initial letter, you said, well, nobody can agree to this MOU because localities have these rules that bar them from entering into these sorts of arrangements. But when TSA responds and says, we're not retaliating against you, we have business justifications, if it's true that they were aware of the business consequences that you allege, namely that there's going to be a lot of entities, maybe everybody except the one outlier, can't enter into this arrangement because of rules that prohibit us from doing that. But we understand that's the consequence, but that's too bad. This protection is too important to us. That's too bad. We're going to go ahead and do it anyway. Suppose there's documents, we don't know, but suppose there's documents or at least some indication that that was TSA's thought process. Did they have to spell that out in response to a letter from you that says you retaliated against us? And they say, no, we didn't. We had business justifications. Maybe there's a follow-on point that says, we had business justifications. We understand that those business justifications may cause us to undermine this program, but that's a cost we're willing to live with. But do they have to spell that out in response to you when your allegation is that they retaliated against you?
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, they rely on post hoc litigation affidavits and no contemporaneous emails. One would expect that instead of having the affidavits of the two lawyers from the Office of Chief Counsel, if there were contemporaneous emails talking about the need for this change and the legitimate reasons. Now, we would argue there's pretext, and let me just be clear. It's not just that they were shooting themselves in the foot. They were shooting Security Point in the heart. I mean, so that's the problem here, is that when you look at the pretext issues, and there are many ways to look at it, one element is, well, they were hurting the TSA zone interest. Another one is, they didn't need this indemnification language. There's an implied license at the 40 airports where Security Point was. Yeah, well, there's an implied license, exactly. And actually, our first letter was August 16th to DOJ counsel in the patent case, because as soon as this came out and we knew about it, we said, this is a huge problem. So we didn't lie and wait until December of 2012. We told John Fargo at the DOJ, who is their lawyer in the patent case, this has to stop. You have to help us.
You could have written two different types of letters to TSA. One would have said, stop this, you're retaliating against me. And the other would have said, stop this, you're shooting yourself in the foot. It's arbitrary and capricious, not because you're retaliating against me, but because it's a terrible idea what you're doing. You're killing this program because nobody's going to be able to continue with it. And I take the point that your letter is in some sense a hybrid of those two, but the focal point is on retaliation. And when they respond and they say, no, we're not retaliating against you, we had actually legitimate business reasons to do this, what's the a reason under the APA that they have to follow up and also show you that their response to what could have been the other letter, which says it's arbitrary and capricious because you're killing the program?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this case we have these emails from Arthur Drenth, which was their voice. They're basically their liaison to the field. And these emails open a window into the workings of the TSA Office of Chief Counsel. And when he says when he sends a public message to give to airports, and then in the same email announcement says, now there's a private message, you have to delete it and only give it verbally. The reason why we're doing this is because Security Point has a patent and they're asserting it. And by the way, airport operator, if you continue to do business, you'll get sued too. And that was false. Then we have the various emails that Mr. Drenth also sent to people in Boston when he tells the TSA official, these guys are trying to push the envelope. And we're not going to be pushed around with people like them. The source of this could only have been the Office of Chief Counsel when they made their decision to change this MOU. So I guess we have robust evidence in this particular case, which we think should be part of the record, as it reflected what OCC was up to show that there's pretext. And if you have pretext, then I don't think you can rely on an allegation that, well, we did this to protect the intellectual property rights of the TSA, especially given that they didn't need to do anything. They were already protected in the 40 airports. We understand in the 400 airports where the gray bins are, where there is no Security Point presence, that's what our patent litigation is about, not the other 40 airports. They wanted to get leverage in that case. They wanted that case to be over. They wanted Security Point to no longer have any more additional revenues to fund. I mean, when this all came down, we were starting depositions in the patent case, and these were revenues from additional airports that we weren't able to get and fund the litigation because of the OCC activity here. So our position is, if you look at all the facts, including the ones we think are part of the administrative record, or should be, rather, then it's a compelling case for retaliation and arbitrary conduct, and we ask that the decision be vacated and that the agency... Go ahead.
Let me ask you just one follow-up. So suppose, for argument's purposes, that we think there's that there is enough in the record, not that we think it, but that there is enough a record to disprove sufficiently your allegation that it's retaliation, that retaliation was the motive. But we can't tell whether there's enough in the record to sort of justify this move under the MOU as non-arbitrary and capricious as a broad business matter, that, you know, did the agency actually take into account whether it was going to kill the program and all this sorts of stuff. So is that in within the fold of your APA claim, assuming that there's no retaliation?
Yes. Motor, State Farm, clearly, you know, there was evidence that the agency did not address in their final decision, which was the impact on the program and the fact that the airports legally could not agree to this language that was not discussed.
This isn't it's not a rulemaking. I mean, they're responding to a letter that you give them.
Yes.
So there's no abstract requirement that they address every conceivable thing in the response to you.
Not every conceivable thing. That's right. The main thing, though, I think they needed to address the main thing. The other thing is their declarations, by the way, which they're submitting, we think are post hoc, don't even have a denial. They don't, if you read them, they don't actually deny that they knew about Security Point or that they were acting to do something to hurt Security Point. Those paragraphs are missing, which is interesting as well.
They deny retaliation.
They don't.
Oh, I thought they did.
No. They say We finally got around to putting in some intellectual property clauses. That's something we needed to do.
I thought that, well, JA 578, your allegation that this section in the MOU amounts to retaliation against Security Point for filing a lawsuit against TSA is unfounded.
No, I'm sorry. I should have been clear. I'm talking about the declarations were submitted by the chief counsel and her colleague.
Sorry.
Those declarations don't say that. That's true. The final order does make that allegation.
Okay.
Can I ask
sure.
you a question while you're sitting down? This MOU, which is between the TSA and the AOA, when I first read it, I thought, well, your client is a third-party beneficiary. I don't think it is. It's more like a contract of adhesion or something. But what I want to know is, from your contract with the AOA, where in it, and I guess I have to refer you first to the Memorandum of Understanding. Do you have that in front of you?
I can get that, Your Honor.
All right. It's paragraph 3.
Of the new one? The revised
yes.
one?
Yes.
Okay.
This may have been in the old one, too. But it's the discussion of who owns the furnishings and so forth. But it says, in recognition of this third-party relationship, that is, between the AOA and the TSA, the airport operator hereby warrants that it has the legal authority via its agreement with the third-party owner, which is you, to bind the owner to the provisions of this MOU. And I just want you, while you're seated, to show me where in this specimen contract, if the specimen contract contains it, where it is.
The Charlotte one that we
right.
that we provided, sure. And then come back up afterwards.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I'm John Capel with the Appellate Staff, Civil Division, U.S. Department of Justice, and I'm representing the respondent, Transportation Security Administration, on this petition for review. The TSA acted reasonably and did not retaliate against petitioner in violation of the First Amendment when it rejected the petitioner's claim that it should rescind two provisions, the indemnity provision and the continued use provision that TSA had put in to protect legitimate interests under the spin advertising program.
Did Ms. Kerner ever respond in any way to the contention of, I think, the first letter, the December letter, observing that there was an implied license, so that the whole problem that the revision in the MOU was supposed to address was, at least in their view, non-existent. I didn't see any response of any kind to that.
I don't believe there was an explicit response to that, but it is implicit. The problem with that, with
where
the implied,
is it implied?
Well, it's implied in the nature of the program, because the program, it can't just focus simply on the 41 security, the 41 airports that Security Point already has. The agency had to take into account its potential liability with respect to all airports.
Is this argument made anywhere? Ms. Kerner's letter?
Well, again, Ms. Kerner says that it is to protect the agency against liability and against
the... response to a specific statement as to why there's no need for protection, and maybe the argument you're making would have been a sound response to that, but she doesn't offer it.
Well, she says that it's generally to protect the agency from liability for intellectual property infringement. And to ensure the continued operation of the program.
If she had focused on that, it would seem to invite a colloquy with Security Point, in which Security Point presumably would have said, interesting point, why don't you qualify the MOU revision to address instances where there is no implied license or express license?
Well, I don't believe that Chief Counsel Kerner was obligated to enter into a colloquy. She had to decide the matter before her.
I'm not suggesting that Kerner was obliged to enter into a colloquy. The question is whether the answer Kerner gave was reasonable under the circumstances, and part of reasonableness goes to considering the contentions of the person who has applied for an order.
The decision letter it makes clear what the reasons were. Perhaps they were not. It didn't flesh out the particular aspect of the need for for an across the board indemnification, which is. But that clearly is what was driving the concern.
Because it's not clear to me. I find the letter one of the most obscure bureaucratic documents I've read in 28 years of reading obscure bureaucratic documents.
Well, Your Honor,
I agree.
I can only say that the letter does, it addresses the point that petitioner was invoking, which was that the TSA had allegedly retaliated against.
Let me turn to another aspect of it, and that is the. Reasonably clear that the December letter makes the argument you're harming yourself. We infer from that that your true purpose must be retaliation. And there are various responses it could make to that. But the response that it does make is, since May 2, 2011, when Security Point first filed its patent infringement lawsuit, 14 airports have signed MOUs. But that's transparently irrelevant. Right? That's not the interesting starting date.
Your Honor,
the interesting starting date is when the revisions in the MOU became public, or at least probably public.
I would respectfully disagree that's an irrelevant date, because it certainly shows the fact that Security Point entered into these contracts without any objection from TSA. During that period, and the TSA also didn't terminate any of the existing MOUs, that suggests that there was not the intent was not retaliatory, because if TSA had wanted to retaliate against Security Point, there would have been a much more effective and severe measures that it could have taken.
TSA have a unilateral right to terminate the agreements at will?
Yes, Your Honor. Both of the parties, both the TSA and the airport operator, have the right to terminate basically in their own discretion and without notice. But the and but TSA didn't do that in any airport, in any of I believe 41 airports that Security Point had. And the only airport, San Diego, subsequently dropped out of the program, but that was not TSA's doing. That was because San Diego had an expiration clause in its MOU, and as a result, to enter into a new MOU, it would have had to use the new MOU, which it chose not to do.
So a common way to bolster allegations that a party's engaged in retaliation or discrimination is to make the allegation and then to say that what you put forward as your real justification is a chimera because it can't possibly be right. So it lends the lie to the entire enterprise, so the only thing left is retaliation. So here they write a letter that says, we're alleging that you're engaged in retaliation, and the amendment of the MOU in the way that you desire to amend it is going to kill the program. The implication of which is that entire thing is pretextual, and really what this is about is retaliation. And the letter that you send back, I don't think responds to the kind of pretext part of that, which is that you're going to kill the program if you do this.
Well, the letter discusses it affirmatively in terms of TSA's reasons for insisting on these new clauses in the MOU, which was to protect itself against potential liability throughout the program, nationwide.
All of which seem, I have to say, that the business justifications, I take the point, there's legitimate business justifications for doing this. And then the question becomes, well, and the consequence of following those business justifications is that the program can't continue to function because essentially no jurisdiction can enter into this arrangement.
Well, Your Honor, that certainly the Durango example, which is in the record, contradicts that in and of itself, because Durango did enter into the new MOU after it was enacted,
would have been a response. I don't think the letter, the TSA letter, refers to, or does it? Does it refer to Durango? I can't remember.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it.
One potential response is to say, actually, that's wrong. It's not going to kill the program. Jurisdictions can do this. Another potential response would be to say, well, maybe it's true that a lot of jurisdictions are going to be unable to do this, but this is really important to us. And
Your Honor, I agree. I believe that the chief counsel's letter actually tended toward your second option. That was implicit in it, that the need for protection against potential intellectual property liability was so great that TSA felt that it had to insist on this provision.
The need for some response of some kind to the reference in the Security Point letter to an implied license, which certainly makes sense, since the deal, after all, is that the airports will use this stuff, right? It's a little hard to see how there couldn't be an implied license.
Well, that's correct with respect to the airports where Security Point was already the incumbent, but again, there are like more than 400 other airports potentially that could be affected by where TSA could be exposed to intellectual property liability because without the new MOU language. And then of course the continued use provision, again, that also ensures continued operations of the vital checkpoint security functions and a smooth transition whenever there's a termination either between the TSA and the airport operator or the airport operator and the advertising broker, and that was a defect in the original MOU. So,
is the paragraph 3 in the MOU, the paragraph B3, which says that the airport operator is not supposed to remove the furnishings either at the termination of the MOU or before, unless it gives 60 days notice, and then it shall be required to remove all furnishings after giving that notice. you take that paragraph, and then you take the new paragraph 4, which says the airport operator shall provide for the continued use of the furnishings in the event of a termination by the assignment of the furnishings upon request, I take it, of TSA and through this assignment of the license. So I'm trying to figure out how it works. If they terminate the agreement, the MOU, the airport operator has to give 60 days notice that he's going to remove the furnishings, and he has to do that, but he gets around that by assigning the patent to the TSA?
No, Your Honor, actually there are a number of different concerns involved there, but basically the B3 and or 6B3 and 4 are there, they go to different concerns. 6B3, which is the provision that was in the original MOU,
right,
that deals with explicitly with the termination between the of the MOU between the TSA and the airport operator.
Right.
The new provision, which is
4,
that deals with the situation where there's a termination where the underlying agreement, the separate agreement between the airport operator and the advertising broker, is what is involved. So, again, I would just in closing, I would emphasize that TSA's letter establishes that this decision was not arbitrary and capricious, and there was not a colorable First Amendment retaliation claim, so I would just urge the court to deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Your Honor, may I address your homework assignment? So it's page 2 of the document that we submitted yesterday at the court's request, the exemplar. Paragraph 4 is as close as I think this document comes to addressing the MOU. It actually refers to the MOU. It makes it an exhibit. And, you know, the airport operator agrees to submit and enter into the MOU with the TSA, and it's going to make it an exhibit.
But it doesn't say anything about you all, does it?
No.
It
doesn't say anything.
It's agreement with the third party owner of the furnishings that it has the legal authority.
It has legal authority, but it doesn't go into any patents or intellectual property or anything like that. With regard to paragraph 4, Your Honor, that you were just talking with counsel about, I mean, what strikes me about that paragraph is that the TSA was putting in a provision at the same time as the indemnification language. Now, we submit they knew the indemnification language was going to stop airports from using security points. Certainly Arthur Drent's email to the airport operators, or I'm sorry, the deleted email made the threats that if they deal with security point, they'll be sued. So it made sense to put in this new provision, because what this new provision says is once you break off from security point, you keep all their stuff and we get to use all their stuff. So tables, chair, you know, the tables, the carts and trays. So unfortunately there is a purpose that seems quite consistent with our beliefs here, which is that they were putting in a clause for the day after security point was out of the airport. Finally, Your Honors, I would just say when it goes to the issue of pretext and reasonable business, et cetera, JA-519 was the attempt by the City of San Jose that wanted this program. And so they write a letter, the city attorney writes a letter to the TSA. We cannot accept this new indemnity provision you've added because they've been negotiating under the old MOU. However, we can give you different language. We've changed the language from a direct indemnity provision, which we can't agree to one where the city will include TSA as an indemnified party in the city's agreement with the advertiser. And then they actually amended that language and submitted it to the TSA, and the TSA ignored it, never did anything with it. So the TSA had the ability to be flexible if they had a legitimate concern, which we don't think there was here, but they ignored that. Under the drive, we would submit to basically punish Security Point for having the audacity to sue TSA for patent infringement. Thank you.
Can I ask you one more question about paragraph 4 in your agreement, this exemplar? I don't see anywhere where it even mentions the furniture.
The furnishings?
I mean, no, mentions you. I mean, the security point, the broker.
Well, let's see at the end of the document.
Because you're the third-party owner of the furnishings. That it,
right.
Yeah, that is referred to in paragraph 3 of the MOU, which says the airport authority has the authority to do all this with the TSA regarding your furnishings, which you own, because of the agreement that you have with the airport operator. You pointed me to paragraph 4, which just says that the operator has the authority to enter into the MOU.
Right. Well, the way I understand it is anything that happens in the checkpoint, TSA has to approve it. So that's why they've got it, this MOU, because you can't bring things into a checkpoint without having the TSA that controls this checkpoint agreeing to it. I mean, there's safety, there's other issues. You don't want to have, you know, messages that could be contrary to the security interests. So we understand that. So therefore, for an airport to do any advertising or anything like that, they've got to get the TSA's blessing through the MOU.
Right.
Now, once they've done that, they still need to do an agreement with the advertising broker. It happens to just be Security Point because there was a competitor that we sued for patent infringement many years ago and settled. I don't know who this outfit is in La Plata or Durango, and we're not aware of any other facts in that letter that's in the record. But certainly as far as the airport needed to enter into this type of exemplar in order for them to get their piece of the revenue from the advertising.
The operator.
The operator, exactly,
right.
Needed to enter into an agreement with Security Point, who signed this document, in order so that once the revenue came in from the advertiser, then there would be an agreement to split that revenue at some percentage, I think it's 15% here, of the gross with the airport operator. And that's the primary purpose of this agreement, is to set out that commercial arrangement that exists.
All right, so is it your interpretation that paragraph 3 of the MOU means that when the airport operator warrants that it has the legal authority in the agreement between the two of you to bind you as the owner of the furnishings, what does that is the required MOU between the airport operator and TSA?
Does it require an MOU? I would say it doesn't require an MOU other than to say it sets out the procedure that says that in order for this to be a legal relationship that is legal, you're going to have to get approval from the TSA through an MOU. And as far as paragraph 3, there's an understanding that the Security Point would own the furnishings, which is the trays, the carts, and the tables, and that the airport operator, like a typical warranty clause in an agreement, is going to warrant to the, in this case, obviously the TSA, that it will own it has an agreement with Security Point in this case, or the advertising broker, to bind the owner with regard to the provisions of the MOU. So to me, it seems like just general information that sort of incorporates both agreements. It's not in and of itself an implied license, because the implied license is by operation of law.
Yeah, that's not my concern. I don't see that the operator has the authority in its agreement with you all to bind you all in the ownership of your furnishings, that they then become the property of TSA.
Well, I think the way the I understand that the way the revised MOU reads, it's a little ambiguous, but it sounds like the TSA is saying at some point before the advertising broker is out of the airport, you need to go to them and get an assignment. That's what that section 4 basically says. You don't have it yet, we understand that, but before you kick them out, or we kick them out, you have to go get an assignment from them, and it's not clear as to how that would play out. It's never happened. I don't know what happened, frankly, with San Diego. That is one airport where we are no longer in, because unlike all the other agreements like this one that are typically go on for a long time, that one had like a 5-year termination clause, and when it terminated, they could no longer do it. And thank you very much.